This is Yvette Monreal, and you're listening to Stargirl After Show.
This is the Stargirl After Show with Sarah and Sean. Your post-show breakdown of DC Stargirl with Easter eggs, exclusive behind-the-scenes info, and cast and crew interviews.
This is our destiny.
I finally know who I really am.
I'm Stargirl.
This is the Stargirl After Show.
Hey, Stargirl fans, welcome back to our coverage of episode 4, Wildcat. This is the Stargirl After Show, sponsored by Stargirl.tv and DCTV.news, your best resources for news, media, and spoilers about Stargirl and other DC Comics properties. I'm Sean.
And I'm Sarah.
And let's get going. First thing to say, I forget to do this at the top every week. This is the week. We're getting it right. This episode was written by the great James Robinson. If you listen to our preseason episodes, you heard us talk about James a lot. He's the reason that Stargirl is Stargirl and not the Star Spangled Kid. He is the reason Geoff Johns wrote for the Justice Society. All of this really goes back to James Robinson, so it's amazing having him writing this episode. And it was directed by Rob Hardy. And this guy, he is great. He's well known for things like Stomp the Yard and Troy. And he first got into TV with directing some ER. But he's gone on to superhero stuff. Like he directed 3 episodes of Arrow, 3 episodes of Flash, some Black Lightning, Doom Patrol, Runaways, before finally coming to Stargirl. And everybody on the show was really excited to have him around, because when he first landed at the production offices, he poked his head into a meeting and I was around the corner and I just heard applause break out.
Oh, wow.
Amongst everyone in this production meeting. But that's Rob Hardy. I could spend the whole episode talking about James Robinson, but we've already done that. So you guys can go back and listen to our James Robinson talks in previous episodes if you'd like. He is a great and wonderful human being, though.
Yeah, and in this episode, you are also going to hear from Wildcat herself. Yvette Monreal is going to be... Sean interviewed her, so we'll hear from her shortly.
So, Sarah, walk us through the episode.
All right, so this episode is basically all about Courtney recruiting Yolanda to be Wildcat. So we are going to start out 3 months ago, and we see Yolanda very different from how she is in the first 3 episodes. She's, with her family, very happy. She is running for class president. I love that everyone is wearing buttons supporting her. And she has a wonderful boyfriend, or so it seems at first, with Henry King. And they're happy going through the hallways. But of course, her nemesis, Cindy, does not look very happy about this.
So the thing I love about this opening sequence in the flashback is there's no dialogue. It opens with her smiling. Like, she wakes up. We don't know that she's a different person, basically, yet. And then she sits up and she just smiles real big. And Love Myself by Haley Steinfeld starts playing. And I gotta say, not my kind of music, but I found myself like really jamming to it.
Yeah, it fit really well.
The music that they pick on this show is just so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no dialogue at all until the very end when Principal Bowen is like trying to calm everybody.
I actually didn't notice that whole time there was no dialogue. That was done really well.
Yeah, there's none at all. She's like just sort of walking up to her family and they're all smiling at her and they're putting on their buttons with pride and she's pinning the button on Henry and everybody's just so happy. And when her and Henry are texting, it's just text bubbles.
And in those texts, we see that Henry is pressuring Yolanda into sending him a nude picture. And we see that she does. And at school the next day, I guess it's a little unclear as to how it happened, but Cindy ends up having the picture and sending it to everyone in the entire school.
This calls back to a couple things in the first episode, because Cindy doesn't have Henry's phone long enough, clearly, to like get the photo off of it or send it to herself or anything like that. But you remember when she meets Courtney, she says, okay, I'll text you. And Courtney's like, okay, my number, I have it. How do you? Don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah.
So this could be like some sort of Cindy specialty. Like she just is or has some sort of hacker skills or something. Or we're overthinking it. However, remember this whole event was also called back to when we first meet Henry.
Mm-hmm.
He comes up to the loser's table and says, smells like slut over here. You take any more pictures lately? Is what he says to Yolanda.
Which during this episode, he actually looks upset that the pictures got around. So I don't know if he's trying to save face and being a jerk about it, or if he thought she sent it to someone else. I don't know.
So it's a little bit of a mixed messages thing, right? Because he's clearly showing Travis and Brian the pictures of her.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even think anything of it. She sees it happening, but she probably just thinks he's showing them some meme or something.
Yeah.
But he's clearly showing them the photos. So that's a big asshole move right there.
Oh, yeah.
But that isn't to say that he wanted them to be distributed to everyone in the school, which, again, that's not something a teenager can do with one little swipe of their finger.
No.
So I think Cindy's maybe got a special phone. I don't know what it is. It's just some extraness going on there.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think how I read it with Henry was that this went out there. It happened, and now that she's the pariah and he's like football guy or whatever, you know, the school cliques have a hierarchy and a rule. They have rules, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now she's an outcast and he's obligated by his social caste to make fun of the outcast. It's peer pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. And then if he's also deflecting the attention off of him by being a jerk to her, because he's not going to want to get in trouble with his dad. He's terrified of him. So he's going to not want to bring any attention to the fact that he was the one that asked for the photo and he was the one that photo originated from. However, it was to get out.
Yeah, he's also, you know, if you're to stick up for her the way Courtney does for these first four episodes, the threat is that he then also would become a pariah.
And no one wants to risk that.
It's sort of sink or swim in the popular kids circle.
Mm-hmm.
I have one thing to say about the voting buttons and posters. I took the photos for the Vote Now buttons, and that's how I met both Yvette and Meg. Taking those photos. The costume department had a little studio set up, like a little photo studio with a backdrop for taking good photos of the costumes for reference.
Oh.
And so I just used that and then, you know, graphiced up to the posters and the buttons, and that's that.
All right, so we are now at present day. We go into Courtney's room and she's going through all the great stuff that she got at the JSA. I love that she's playing with the pen.
I love her like hesitation and then click, click, mm-hmm. click, click. Oh, she's so great. I don't have anything else to say about that except just how great Breck is.
Yeah. And then I love that it didn't work. And so she was like, meh, and just throws it in with all her other pens. And so I hope that comes back at some point. But it did give a little bit of a giggle when the scene ended. So I don't think it's gone. But she is going through the yearbook and looks like she's looking for different people to get to know that might want to join her team.
Yeah. And so I have a couple things when she goes downstairs to breakfast. So Mike wants Pop-Tarts, and he says something like, nobody ever died from too much sugar. And Courtney's like, are you joking?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really wondering if that is a little reference to Breck's diabetes.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I heard that and I was like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
But more importantly, and the fact that it comes up right after the scene with the pen is really great, because I don't know if you noticed, but Mike said he wants to have his friend over.
Mm-hmm.
His friend Joaquim. So Joaquim Thunder, Joaquim Williams, actually, who goes by Joaquim Thunder, is the JSA legacy character that takes over for Johnny Thunder and gets the pink pen.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't put that together.
He is a young black teenager.
Huh.
So there's a little Easter egg for you. Little Joaquim Thunder drop.
Oh, I wonder if we're going to meet him later then. Because he doesn't end up, we don't see him coming over to the house in this episode. But hopefully he shows up later.
Now, Joaquim Williams is his actual name. And I noticed this Cindy's sidekick's name is Jenny Williams.
Oh, yeah.
So I did some searching to see if they are related. And it does not appear so. At least in the comics, they are not. It's just a coincidental last name.
Okay.
Another Easter egg, real quick, is the shirt that Courtney's wearing through most of the episode. This is Half Day. That is an exact replica of a shirt that she wears in Stars and Stripe and JSA.
Yeah, in the very first issue of Stars and Stripe. I was flipping through that comic. Actually, my husband was reading it while I was watching the episode, and he was like, hey, she's wearing that shirt in here. So then I started flipping through to look for other shirts, and in the first episode, she wears one with cherries on it. And she wears that same shirt in issue 4 of Stars and Stripe. So now I'm going to be on the lookout.
We should give a shout out to Emily Gunshore, the costume designer for the non-super suits. This was all her. She had a stack of the comics on a little like rolling tray thing next to her desk. Every single individual issue of Stars and Stripe like fanned out. And she clearly was going through them all the time. She had images posted all around her walls. And she came to me and she was like, hey, I want to replicate this Half Day shirt. Can you find some fonts that look good? And we'll have Jeff look at them and pick one out. And she did a really great job of having like the rest of the shirt match as well. I just made the words Half Day. Like, mm-hmm. That's just a couple of font picks. I take no credit for that. But getting the black sleeves with, I think they had red rings around the...
Yeah, I think there was some yellow in there too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yellow is what I meant, not red.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great match. And she did that throughout the seasons. She just like created all these great looks for everybody. All of Cindy's amazing outfits were all Emily. And mm-hmm. her assistant costume designer, Mercedes, who I've worked with on several TV shows, and she's just a joy as well. So where I can, I want to give out some shout outs to some crew members that maybe don't get as much attention as others.
Well, and beyond just the replicating of those shirts, a lot of the colors in the costuming, I noticed it especially in the first episode with just the subtle things like Courtney wearing like the blue and Pat wearing red whenever they're together, that kind of stuff, just before they even became sidekick and hero. It was just a little bit of a hint towards all the stuff coming.
Yeah. So pretty quickly, we are like getting back to seeing Yolanda as a counterpoint to the 3 months ago Yolanda.
Yeah. We're back at school the next day, and Courtney she's looking through the yearbook and see that Yolanda is a boxer and trains in that. And then we see Yolanda and Henry bump into each other, and Cindy, who is now Henry's girlfriend, is irate about it and is harassing Yolanda, wanting to know what she said to him. Courtney, of course, ever the hero, steps up. And I feel like we got pretty pretty big showdown between them, and Cindy saying, "You have no idea who you're messing with." Courtney says, "Neither do you." And Cindy says, "You will never see me coming."
That was very menacing.
Yeah.
I also want to point a little behind the scenes thing out here. That scene is the last time the high school hallway is set in a real school.
Oh, really?
Every other high school scene, hallway scene that we see from here on for the rest of the season is on a hallway that we built on the stages.
Oh, okay.
As well as classrooms, I believe. The hallway, the classrooms, those are all on our stages, you know, just like 500 feet from the Whitmore Dugan house. The gym, the auditorium, the cafeteria, all that stuff, that's still at the actual high school.
Mm-hmm.
But it just got easier to have complete control over that hallway.
Okay.
So this is the only scene this episode that is shot in that hallway. And in fact, when Courtney is then chasing Yolanda down the hall and Yolanda's telling her to just leave her alone, that is on stage. And I was looking for any tell and I can't see any difference at all.
No, I didn't notice anything.
I mean, I knew they were different and I couldn't see it. So
yeah.
Good job, art department. Again, art department, this is the first episode where Eddie Mattazzoni has stepped up from art director and taken over the role of production designer. So he'll be on from here through the end of the season as well.
Oh, okay. All right. So once we have this conversation with Cindy and Courtney, we cut to Pat, and he is at a junkyard at Zeke's. And he's buying an exhaust pipe for a dump truck.
And now, do you know what I noticed about Pat in this episode?
What?
He only has one solo scene with Courtney when she's leaving for school. That's it. That's the breakfast and her leaving for school is the only interaction Pat and Courtney have in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed it.
Yeah. And throughout the whole episode, when Courtney's talking to Yolanda, she is never saying that she is, you know, she works with Pat, like that he's her sidekick or anything. She never once mentioned him, except for when Yolanda's like, "Oh, I thought that guy was your dad." And she goes, "No, he's my stepdad."
Yeah, I didn't notice that, actually. She didn't mention him as a part of her whole superhero identity at all.
No.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if that was a means of protecting him or if she was just trying to take pride of... or take ownership that she was the hero and she was doing this, or if she's trying to cut him out. I don't know.
She did talk plenty about her dad.
Yeah.
Starman.
But I am very curious as to what Pat is going to be working on if he's getting this exhaust pipe for the dump truck. I'm assuming he's doing, you know, some enhancements to the stripe suit, but...
Some Pat enhancements.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I assumed it was for the suit. Like, he's not working on a dump truck.
No, I didn't think it was a dump truck, but I didn't know if he had something else. You know, the jokes about the time machine, maybe he is trying to do that. Who knows? And then back at Pat's garage, Denise Zarek shows up. She needs her car looked at. She went to it for a drive because she was all alone, and she's just kind of telling her whole story to Pat. And, you know, he offers his condolences for everything and she has to take off and he fixes her car for her. And I'm just very intrigued by their relationship because she seemed to latch onto him really fast. And he seems to be just like a nice guy, like he'll talk to whoever. But she seems to have more than just that.
I think that maybe there's something inherently trustworthy about Pat.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she's like just latching onto that and she's like, "This guy, I feel like I need to try to warn him about this town."
Yeah.
Like in the open house scene, it did seem almost like there was some sort of like romantic thing, but I don't think that's what it was at all.
No, it seemed mildly flirtatious, but it seems more of like a trusting thing.
It seems almost like a Stepford wife has come out of it and is looking for a lifeline.
Yeah, I could see that.
But Sarah, right now is the part that I've been waiting to talk about. It's kind of all I want to talk about.
Okay.
Is Dragon King.
Yes.
Because here's the thing. I knew he had the lizard skin around his eyes. I knew he had the contact lenses. What I was not expecting was his lizard blink.
Yes. Yes.
I could talk about his lizard blink all day long. Because the first time it happened, I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then it happened like five more times. And I was like, oh my God, it's so convincing looking.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
So subtle. But the subtlety makes it creepy.
Oh, it's very creepy. And you can see in that scene, even Jordan seems uncomfortable and freaked out by him. So in the scene, we learn that Dragon King has this machine that he's going to be making for the Injustice Society that Jordan has asked him to now start on. I guess we don't know details, but he says one generation's ultimate sacrifice will protect the next. So it doesn't sound like it's going to be too great for a bunch of people, but...
But it's going to be super great for everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it sounds like. We did skip one thing, though, and it's very important, especially mm-hmm. given that James Robinson wrote this episode. He's looking at the ISA portrait, and he says, I get it. I am now completely on board with the Injustice Society. I'm committed to the cause more than any of the rest of these Jokers. And I would never betray you like the Shade did.
Mm-hmm.
And it pushes in on a shadow obscured face with big round glasses and a top hat.
Yeah.
And I have talked about this before on the podcast, but the Shade is probably the most interesting character from James Robinson's run on Starman. He is a villain who is less concerned with villainy than protecting the city that he loves, which is Opal City in this instance.
Okay.
And he will team up with good guys, bad guys, cops, whoever, to make sure that the city is protected because he's like an immortal. He's several hundred years old. And he's made this city his home for like 150 years or something. And he just loves it.
Huh.
And so he's morally ambiguous, but dependably on the side of Opal. And I love that. And I love that they're sort of calling into that. Clearly, not clearly, but it seems as if there's... something the ISA was doing that was interfering with whatever it is on the show that is important to him the way Opal City is in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to turn against them to protect that thing he loves.
Okay.
That's my guess.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I just loved that mention, especially in the James Robinson episode.
Yeah, especially knowing that last episode, Jordan was talking about improving the world, going city by city and small town by small town. So maybe he already tried that with Shade's city and he shut it down.
Oh, and I need to bring up that actually, because we dropped the ball, Sarah.
Oh, no.
We didn't think to look up those cities he was name dropping. And those are deep dive like 1940s. DC Comics cities.
Oh, really? Oh, that is disappointing.
Littleton and whatever the other one is. Wow, we really dropped the ball there. Sorry, guys. That was the one Easter egg we missed last episode.
All right. Well, at least we got it now.
Yeah. And let's not forget the other project that Dragon King said that he has been working on.
He's been working on his daughter.
What could that possibly mean? Well, if you've read the comics, you know, but we're not going to discuss it in case you haven't.
Exactly. And then what I found super creepy was he was saying that he was glad Wizard's dead. And then he asked if he could have his body. And Jordan looks very uncomfortable. And he's like, yes. So I don't know what he's planning on doing. That should be very interesting.
Yeah. I got nothing else to say about that. I loved that.
Yeah.
And you know, he also blinked while he asked his reptile blink. So it's just very unnerving. I mean, I had high expectations for the character because Nelson is an amazing actor and the costume design is amazing and the writing is amazing. But oh my God, adding Zoic into the mix for the visual effects of the eye blink just put it over the top.
Oh, yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah.
So unnerving. I want like 10 hours of this character.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he, it seems like they're building him up to be a pretty big player. So I am hoping that that ends up being true. And then we go on back to school and Courtney finds Yolanda with a punching bag training in the gym. And she invites her to dinner, is kind of vague about everything that's going on. Doesn't give like full details and, you know, she asks, you know, oh, let's your number. I can text you the address. And of course, Yolanda says, my mom took my phone away. And she puts up this like tough guy act that she doesn't want to. She's like, this doesn't mean anything. I'm not, you know, don't expect me to show up. But then you see she asks her mom permission. She definitely did want to go. And her mom is just saying she's grounded until she says so.
What I love here is this is the first time since the flashback that we see her with her family.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole tone is a complete 180. And it's like her brother is the only person that still sees her as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But her grandmother, her mother, her father, they seem like they're dead inside.
Yeah.
Like she just utterly destroyed their faith in humanity, their faith in their daughter. And it's not fair.
No. Like, it was heartbreaking to watch because she wanted, you saw how much she cared about her family before and how close they were. And then she just, something like just going to dinner at someone's house shouldn't be that big a deal.
I think this is a thing that a lot of girls go through, especially teenagers now. Like nude selfies are, I feel like everyone is doing it that is of a certain age. And any of these girls could go through what Yolanda's going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know like revenge porn sites are a huge issue. I was, you know, a little too old to have smartphones when I was in high school. So I never had the experience with this even being a possibility. So I have no direct experience, but I know of friends whose kids have gone through, like their friends and stuff have had these issues. So I know it is happening in the world right now. And I think it's very prevalent. And I think the episode handles it really, really well because it's clear that her family and like Cindy and Henry, that they are the villains of the story. And in this next scene, when Courtney is going to talk to Yolanda at school the next day, Yolanda says, you know, I never should have sent those. And Courtney says, you never, or he never should have shared them. And you can see that that's the first time Yolanda has ever heard that, that she has always just assumed that she was in the wrong. And no, she was the victim.
That's what stood out to me is when she looked up at Courtney after Courtney said that, I was like, oh my God, Courtney is the first person to tell her that what Henry did was wrong.
Yeah.
And she loses it. Like, that's her first ally in 3 months.
Yeah.
Her first. Like, her brother tries to stand up for her a little bit, but he gets shut down and just stops.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen Courtney stick up for her before, but that's nowhere near the allyship that she's giving her when she tells her, no, he shouldn't have shared them.
Yeah.
And before we leave the gym, I just want to get back to some of the boring behind the scenes stuff. This boxing gym, you notice all those those bright windows in there. Mm-hmm. You can sort of see the plants on the outside. So this gym was our catering room. This is where we all would go eat lunch.
Oh.
And it is in the center of the big warehouse that we used as our stages. So those windows face out to warehouse. Not sunlight at all.
Really?
And so because they made this into the boxing gym, for the majority of the season, our catering was moved right outside of there and just set up tables in a big wide open space instead of a little room. So I don't know if that's interesting to anybody, but, I thought someone might find it interesting. So I put it in there.
Yeah. It's interesting how much things have to change and shift, like as the season go on or the filming goes on. It's like, oh no, we need to reutilize this space for something else, and how fluid everything has to be in production. One more thing we should mention about that scene is Courtney is connecting to Yolanda over Henry, and the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And she tells Yolanda, hey, I blew up his car. And Yolanda admits that she doesn't want to, but she really hates Henry King. And when Courtney's like, do you want to see how he blew up his car? That's what gets her. And that's what hooks Yolanda into coming over later.
Yeah, Courtney is a Machiavellian little, like she can, I don't know if manipulate's the right word. She knows which buttons to push. Mm-hmm. I think she can read people really well.
Yeah, I think that's a good description.
And so from there, we got Denise Zarek leaving town.
Yes. And so she comes to say goodbye to Pat and tells him, don't trust this town. She tells him that William did not have a heart attack. And he sees there's a box of magic, like the top hat and like magic supplies in the car. And she says that, you know, this is all she has left of Joey. And he wanted so much to be like his father. And Pat's like, he was a councilman, right? And so I hope Pat's putting it together in his head. I have faith that he is. And he just wasn't letting it on.
Especially given that it was the wizard who almost took Pat out at the mansion 10 mm-hmm. years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He said, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
I love Denise, like, taking a real chance here. Like, she could have just blown town. And then maybe things wouldn't have turned out the way they did for her.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what a role this brief stop played.
Yeah.
For some reason, she was compelled to, like, finally lay it all out for Pat. No more weird, vague clues. Just like, something's wrong. My husband was straight murdered. And I gotta get out of this town forever. Hope you're well. Goodbye.
Yeah, I didn't see her leaving town. I thought she was kind of just going to fizzle out of the show kind of thing. But she, yeah, ended up being very important. So we will see.
And then just this great conversation in the basement,
where Courtney and Yolanda are going on, and she's showing off the staff, and she's saying, my dad is Starman. And Yolanda's like, who?
He was a superhero. I'm a superhero.
Yeah.
I have a costume and everything. And Yolanda's like, okay, I'm gonna head out.
Yeah, I'm surprised she stuck around. Although I guess seeing the staff is pretty convincing.
Even after seeing the staff, though, she was like, oh, you're insane. I didn't realize.
Yeah. But she still, Courtney convinces her to try on the Wildcat suit. And even though, you know, Yolanda's like, oh, it smells like gym class. And Courtney's like, it's authentic. And we see, I was really wondering, because I don't know too much about all the JSA heroes and what powers they all have. So I was like, how can you just pick someone to put on a suit and then have them become Wildcat? So I like that the powers are in the suit. And then that's what gives her the abilities.
Yeah, this is a real departure from the comics, because in the comics, Ted Grant is just a boxer who dresses like a cat. None of this is there. And I'm going to just make a wild assumption here that this Ted Grant on Stargirl, he must have liked to box in different weight classes. Mm-hmm. Like maybe he trimmed down a lot to do a middleweight fight and then bulk up for a heavyweight fight, because it's the only reason I can think for the one size fits all costume design.
Yeah, I like that theory.
I guess now maybe someone made the suit for him. Maybe he has like a special super suit designer, mm-hmm. because he's got like the claws are there, but Ted Grant never has claws. Ted Grant has no gloves. He has the boxer wrappings on his fists.
Yeah.
So you never see him with the claws. He never has any like cat-like powers at all. But Yolanda Montez in the comics very much was like agile cat lady kind of thing. So I like that they use the suit to bridge those two. Instead of, because in the comics, she was, I believe, Ted's goddaughter. And so Ted had trained her in boxing.
Okay.
So there, that was the connection. The way this story rolls out, they have to bridge it with the suit. And I think it's a brilliant way to do it.
Yeah, I think it worked really well.
Real quick little behind the scenes thing. When she's going through the Wikipedia page, the image of Wildcat is the super suit concept art.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool. The
picture of Ted Grant. I don't know why they opted not to do a photo, but to do the concept art. But I think that's great.
Yeah, that's really neat. I also love when once it becomes form-fitting and Yolanda says it's tight, Courtney says, "You look badass." I love that she didn't comment on her appearance like, "Oh, you look so skinny in that." It was, "No, you look badass. That's awesome," kind of thing. I thought that was really good and fit in this episode well. And then, as you were saying, they were going through the Wikipedia page on Wildcat because they didn't know the details, which I love that they're like, "Oh, well, I don't know. Let's go to Wikipedia." And end up, Yolanda cuts through Courtney's toaster with her claws, is hopping on fences and jumping off of things. And then it all culminates with her on top of a building. And Courtney's like, "Oh, yeah, no, I mean, it says right here that Wildcat can jump off of buildings. So, of course, you can do it." I think that was like one of the times in this episode where it's like Courtney's not thinking all the way through. Like, and Yolanda's even like, "You know, anyone can write anything on Wikipedia."
You know what's really brilliant about this whole sequence, though, is it's like a motivated montage. Instead of just giving us like superhero training montage, it's it's using Wikipedia as a way to walk us through this montage in a way that makes sense and feels organic, instead of like, "Oh, it's the Eye of the Tiger," which is funny because, as you'll learn in the interview in just a few short minutes, Yvette was working on a movie with Sylvester Stallone when she got cast in this role. So
yeah.
She went from working with Rocky himself into being a boxer. And I love that.
Of course, yeah. I wonder if she asked him for any tips. Or maybe she didn't know about the boxing at that point.
Unclear. I didn't think to ask her.
And then we see kind of after they do all the, you know, Yolanda decides not to jump off the building, and I'm pretty glad that she decided not to do that. And then Courtney and Yolanda are talking, and then they see Henry drive by. And I love how Courtney's like, "Well, Henry's dad is a supervillain. He's one of them." And Yolanda's just like, "Yeah, that makes sense."
That makes so much sense.
Yeah. And then the whole thought process of like, "Oh, if he's a villain, other villains would be going to see him." And like Yolanda's like, "Yeah, they would be going to see them. Or would they be doing the opposite of that?" And Courtney's like, "Oh my God, you're such a natural." I'm like, she has said two conflicting things, but okay.
Yeah. Also, I don't know how you can investigate the opposite. "Ah, this proves it. They haven't been to see him." What?
Uh-huh. Exactly.
But when we actually get there, this is my favorite thing, is how much more we get to know the staff here, because Courtney is rushing headfirst into things and she's just going to shut off the power. And the staff, like, think how much cognitive ability it takes for a stick to recognize, dude, if you shut that off, you're going to shut off life support for people. And it holds her back.
Yeah, that was incredible.
And then it follows that up with, okay, you're not coming up with a plan. Here's the plan. I'm a wreck stuff. So it saves the people on life support. It comes up with and executes its own plan.
Yeah, I'm so curious about the staff. And we know that Ted Knight created it. That was said in the previous episode, I believe.
Yes.
And I wonder if it somehow had some kind of AI implanted in it and what all is going on. Yeah, I really hope we learn more about the origin of that staff.
Yeah, I have so many questions. Honestly, if I could do an interview with the staff, I would.
That would be amazing.
So Principal Bowen comes in, plays some creepy violin. So tell me your thoughts. They posit that maybe she is a supervillain with a violin. Is that even a thing? Do you think, yes, she's a supervillain? Or do you think that's a red herring?
I think she is definitely involved with the ISA. I don't know if she's a full-fledged supervillain or if she's maybe like a sidekick type of character. But I do think she's definitely involved. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Just curious what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah.
Because them jumping to that conclusion right away seems like it very much could be a red herring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that'll be fun to explore later.
Yeah. It also gives them a new direction of somewhere to investigate. Because as of right now, they don't know Icicle's true identity. So they can't really go looking for him. They know where Brainwave is, so they don't have to do more investigating into him. But now this is a new person that they can start their plans on.
She didn't sign in. So, I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, it means everything.
Or nothing. See, I'm a natural at this.
Exactly. And then we also see in there, Henry is in there crying when Yolanda's in, and she actually gets out her claws to attack him.
Oh, she's going to mess that boy up.
Yeah, until she hears him say, you know, he's crying and saying, I miss you, Dad. And then that kind of snaps her out of it. But I was a little nervous for what she was going to be doing after seeing what she did to the toaster.
Yeah, and she said, I don't want to hate anybody, but I hate Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And she seemed like she was letting her anger get the best of her.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know if she had empathy for him in that moment or if she just found him pathetic and not worth her time. But for whatever reason, she backs down, rendezvous with Courtney, and gets immediately outed. Her first night out as a superhero to Beth.
Yeah, because sweet Beth is bringing her mom dinner, of course.
Yeah, she's on her way out. And Courtney, again, not on her A game this episode.
Mm-mm.
Between trying to kill all the patients and calling Yolanda by her name.
Yeah, so we'll see if Beth confronts them next. Well, I guess she doesn't know. Courtney, we don't know that she recognized her, but
okay, so she sees that's Yolanda and there's a blonde girl with curly hair flying on a stick next to her, and there is only one person in the whole school that actually talks to Yolanda.
Oh, I'm sure Beth puts it together, but we'll see how that plays out.
I would be very disappointed in Beth if she did not put that together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, can I just give Angelica a quick shout out? If you guys are listening to this as it's new, you know, we're in the middle of a huge Black Lives Matter movement right now. And Angelica Washington is being very vocal, very active. She's out there protesting. She's constantly posting things on her Instagram about what you can do to help, how you can help yourself understand the issues at hand better. If you're not already following Angelica Washington on Instagram, go do that and read every single thing that she posts in her Instagram stories and watch all the videos she posts, because it's very eye-opening and it's very important, and it's a very important message, and we stand behind her 100% in everything she says and does, and we support this whole movement.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my statement for the day, and we can get back to the show now.
Okay. After Courtney and Yolanda's night out, they're back at Courtney's room, and Yolanda admits that she's not ready to be Wildcat. She wants to go back to being herself before she can take on this new identity. So she's not saying I'll never do it, but she's saying this is not the time. I'm not ready.
I think this is so important. And I talked about this with Yvette as well. But I'll just say, like, I've never seen that on this kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
Someone finding their power as a superhero and deciding to take that found power and try to apply it to their life, mm-hmm. instead of the superhero thing.
Yeah.
I love her trying to take back her sense of self. And unfortunately it doesn't work out as we see, but I thought that was a very powerful message. Probably one of the best we've seen on the show so far.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it just had to do with spending time with someone who believed in her. You know, she's spending this time with Courtney, who is not blaming her for anything that's happening. And she's starting to feel like, hey, maybe everyone else is wrong. Maybe I am okay. And I'm sure that powered with the super suit, giving her her added heightened skills and everything. It gave her a whole new perspective. But then back at Yolanda's house, she tries to talk to her parents and say, I made a mistake. It's been months. I have learned my lesson. I'm done apologizing. I love you guys. I am asking for your forgiveness. And her family says no. And that is awful.
Now back to Courtney for a second. I've seen a lot of people online talk about how thus far she seems like she's just sort of a brat. A lot of people are real mad about how she treats Pat. And I mean, I get it, guys. I do. Mm-hmm. Because we all love Pat so much. But I think in this, we see what's really at the core of Courtney is that she believes in people. And her believing in Yolanda helps Yolanda believe in herself,
mm-hmm.
and gets Yolanda on her side. And it's just wonderful seeing Courtney like have this amount of love and this belief in another human being.
Yeah. And then you see that with her returning the Wildcat suit, sneaks it into Yolanda's home, into her room, with a little note of how she needs her. And I could see that being taken as, you know, I don't care what you said. I need you to help me with this. You're wrong. But it also just seems like, hey, I think this is really what you're meant to be. You know, if you're open for it, I want you to come back and join.
Yeah, much like Yolanda herself, I'm on the fence as to Courtney's motivations. Mm-hmm. You like my pun? You like it?
Yeah, I like that.
I can't decide if it's Courtney's stubbornness, just refusing to take no for an answer,
mm-hmm.
or Courtney's belief in her. Like, hey, you can be yourself and also Wildcat. Do both. Come on.
Yeah. I'm going to look at it as a mix of both of them.
She is definitely stubborn. I mean, we know that.
Oh, yes. And then we wrap up the episode back at Zeke's, where Pat is asking where he can buy some caterpillar track. So I don't know what's going on with the suit now, what kind of Pat enhancements he's doing. But while he's there and heading back to find it, he sees Denise's cat and then her car all beat up, windows broken, dented. And we're left to believe that someone attacked her. That's at least what I'm thinking, that maybe the other villains got word that she was leaving and decided to silence her and make sure she didn't cause other issues.
Do you think that she is dead?
I do not.
Do you think that Zeke is involved with the ISA?
I did not think about that at all. So I guess no, that didn't cross my mind. Of course, now I'm thinking about it.
He could be, or he could just not ask questions when someone brings him a scrap car.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a logical place to get rid of a body.
Mm-hmm.
Or evidence in the form of a car.
Yeah.
They did it in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
That's how they got rid of Marvin. And that's the end of the episode. Now, we're going to take a quick break, but first, Sarah, why don't we tell people about our other podcasts?
Okay. If you are interested in other after shows, I do one for the new Nancy Drew show on the CW. It's called What's New Nancy Drew, and the show is not airing right now, so we don't have current episodes, but you can go back, watch all the episodes on the CW app, and then tune in to hear all of our crazy predictions and thoughts and theories.
And if you want to hear three guys completely tear apart screenplays that never got made into movies because they shouldn't have, do that. Go to tablereadspodcast.com for all of that. That's called Table Reads. It is my other podcast, and I'm a big fan of it. I don't know about you. But we'll be right back after this break with a word from Yvette Monreal.
Stargirl After Show. Stargirl After Show.
So I am so happy to be talking to Yvette Monreal today, who plays Yolanda Montez.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
/Wildcat on Stargirl. Hi, Yvette.
Hey, Sean. How are you? I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
I'm so glad to have you here. I can't even tell you.
Yay.
I want to jump in and first talk about your career in general.
Okay.
How long have you been into acting?
I've actually been into acting since I was in high school. I feel like it was a little more looser back then, I guess. I didn't take it as serious when I was in high school, but as soon as I graduated, I went to Santa Monica College for special effects. I don't know if you've heard of the special effects program. It's called Houdini. I was studying that, and as I was doing my projects, as I had to turn things in, I just felt like, wow, that person on the screen that I'm doing all the special effects for, like, that should be me. But I was always scared to pursue acting, and I'll tell you why. There was a teacher from a different school that came to our high school, and he told us a little story about how he worked in stunts and how he worked by big major stars like Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. And he told us, he was like, I haven't seen any of your guys' acting, but I just want to let you know, it's a better chance that you win the lottery than you becoming an actual working actor. And that, I have to tell you, that scared the crap out of me. I was like, oh my God. Acting is such an unstable job that I felt, okay, I'm going to do something at least that's closest to acting. So I could still be in the movie industry because I always loved movies. I loved TV. I wanted to be in that field. So I decided to do special effects, but it didn't make me happy. And while I was in class to soon have a job for special effects, I realized that I need to just go for what I truly, truly desire in my heart, because if not, I would always be wondering what if, and I didn't want that. So it was worth the risk to me, and I was very passionate about it. So I started
around 19, I started saving all my money that I got from my part-time job, and I got headshots. I got into acting classes, and I kind of just navigated through the ups and downs of everything because, you know, there are scams and there are real jobs as well. So I just had to basically go through it because I didn't have anybody in the acting business to show me the ropes. So, that's when your passion kicks in, you know, you're determined to find a way to get in the business because it's all you want. And it felt like it's all I need. All I need is to be an actress and I'll be happy. So, I mean, so far it's been an uphill battle, but so far now it's like, I'm starting to see everything come into fruition. And it's like all that hard work. It was looking back, it was a lot of hard work, but it's definitely worth it because, you know, I saw something, I went after it, and now I'm here and I couldn't be more grateful.
You know, for a lot of actors, the sort of I've made it moment at this point in history is I'm a superhero.
I know.
And you're a superhero.
So crazy.
First, Rambo's killing people to try and save you. And
that was a great experience. Honestly, I loved shooting with Sylvester Stallone. He was the best. It was so good seeing someone who's been in the game for so long. And I've said this so many times, but he still has so much passion for the game. He wants to make the best film possible. And yeah, like, you know, sometimes the movies like that you're a part of, they break the box office numbers, and sometimes they don't. But the point is like all the passion that was put into it. Like, you don't forget that. You don't forget the moments that you're on set. And it's like everything you take on to your next job. And that's what I'm so grateful for. But yeah, he was definitely kicking ass. There was a lot of cool effects in that movie, chopping heads off and stuff.
Yeah. He's actually, or was until the coronavirus outbreak, he was in town filming a superhero movie.
Yeah. He was a Samaritan.
Yeah. And I guess his passion was a bit too strong because some people were getting a little upset at him because he was continuing to film after many other productions had shut down.
Oh, is that true? I didn't know that at all. But
just a couple days.
That's probably his passion kicking in. He's just like, I'm going to do it. But I'm sure it comes out of love, not out of like spite towards anybody. It's, you know, he probably just wanted to get the movie done and maybe everyone would be watching it during the coronavirus. Like, he was willing to risk it. But I know for sure it didn't come out of spite towards anybody.
Oh, of course not.
He's so passionate about his movies and all that. I'm sure he just wanted to get it done for the people.
I really want to go back to the special effects thing. I'm glad you went with acting.
Me too. I'm so happy.
Hollywood is currently not treating their visual effects people maybe as well as they should or could. So I feel like you're doing better now.
It's crazy too, because actually when I was in school, my teacher, she worked at Sony. And she said, if any of you are taking this serious, there's actually openings at our studio. So it was kind of like a shoe-in. Like, if I aced this class and I was actually serious about it, I could have gone on to work at Sony Studios. Like, that's a secure, legit job. But I just couldn't keep wondering, like, what if, you know? It was already killing me inside. So I had to just follow my dream. As cliche as that sounds, I did have to just follow my dream.
I think anyone that follows you on Instagram knows that you like to move and dance around way too much to be sitting at a computer for 10 to 12 hours a day.
I'm very silly. Yes, I love to dance and move around. And I mean, just like everyone who I've worked with so far in the industry as well, they've just all been so nice. I don't really have anybody who I've worked with. I mean, and I know that could be rare sometimes, but I don't really have anybody who I've worked with. And I'm like, yeah, I never want to work with them again. Like, I would work with everybody again if I could. And that just goes to show, like, these experiences happen for a reason. To keep me here.
That's really great. Now, tell me a little bit about how Stargirl came about for you.
My agent sent me an email, and it was actually for a role as Tammy. They use dummy names to hide, I guess, the real characters. Jeff Johns, he really wanted to be secretive about what superheroes he was bringing into the show. So I was going out for Tammy. So I didn't really know if I was going to be a superhero or not, because the sides were dummy sides and the name were dummy sides. But I kind of had like my agents, they told me like a little bit of the background and like who it was for. So it's like, okay, if it's for DC Universe and it's for Jeff Johns, I'm sure it's going to be a superhero show. So I read for it, and mind you, I got the sides the day before, and I didn't get to look at the sides until the day I had to actually go in. So I drove to the casting office, and I drove to the casting office really early. Actually, I sat on the side street for about an hour before the audition actually like happened, until it was my call time. And so I was just reading and trying to memorize my sides because I hadn't looked at it. So I was just looking at it. I was trying to memorize it. And I just had this little epiphany. I'm like, okay, obviously I've only had X amount of time with these sides. So the only thing I could do is play this really grounded and just be me, because if I try to act this out, I know how that goes. You know, they want to look for something that's sincere and genuine. So I sat with it for an hour. I went into the casting office and I read for them. And it's funny because they told me, they're like, okay, in this part, we want you to actually jump. And I remember thinking like, oh, what's a cool way to jump? Because it was Yolanda jumping off of a building. And so I'm like, okay, I know what I'm going to do. I don't know why I felt the need to make my jump different or something, but I jumped and I span around and I plopped on the floor, but then like I fell backwards, and then everyone started laughing and they were just like, that's great, because I actually continued my lines. I'm like, oh, I didn't fall on my feet, but I'm good. I just like kind of improvised the scene a little bit, and it was just the most hilarious thing, and it just felt really right and really, really good. Like the casting really liked it. I liked it. Of course, I did another take where I didn't fall on my butt, but it went really well. And then I booked Rambo, and so I left. And a month later, after I auditioned for Stargirl, they wanted me to do a callback. And so we were scrambling. We were trying to get me back out to LA, but with my shooting schedule, I couldn't leave Spain because I was in Spain shooting a movie, and I was in most of it. So casting actually just decided to send me straight to test for it. And that was really great news, because I was kind of scared. I really liked the role, and I didn't want to miss the opportunity to.
So you skipped callback and went straight to test.
Yes.
And that doesn't really happen, does it?
That's never happened to me in my life.
I've never heard of that happening to an actor. I don't know a lot of actors, but that seems like you made a strong first impression, I'd say.
I think Jeff has a really great intuition with who he sees. I don't know. I just feel like, especially with our cast, everyone who he casts, it seems like inside of them, they are that person, and he just has great intuition. So I feel like it was all kind of meant to be. I really strongly feel that. When I went straight back to testing, I was really shocked because I just thought like, oh, they're not going to call me back. I missed an opportunity. I was really bummed out about it, but no, they sent me straight to testing. And because I couldn't test, I was in Spain. I had a Skype call with Jeff and Melissa Carter, and we kind of just had a conversation about the character, and I was asking him all these questions about it, and we had a really good conversation. And I asked him, I'm like, okay, do you have any notes for me? And he's like, nope, just tape it again. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so broad. Like, do I do this again? Do I do that? Like, I don't even remember what I did. It was a month ago. So I was kind of, I was like, all right, well, I guess I just have to do it. And I went to a casting office. I was in Bulgaria at the time. And I went to a Bulgarian casting office. And I had to do my read with the Bulgarian casting director, and she knew a little bit of English, but the accent was really thick because obviously I'm in a different country naturally. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was funny because even when I was getting self tapes out there, I was going out for other things. Like I couldn't really do it because of the language barrier. I didn't have anybody to shoot it with. So my agents were like, okay, we need to get this done. It needs to look good. And we're going to send you to a casting office so that they can make it look as good as possible. And so when I did it with the Bulgarian casting director, I sent it in, and I guess Jeff and, you know, the writers and producers and everyone saw the tape, and they're like, okay, well, this is what Jeff told me. He was like, okay, if she's this good with that, with the Bulgarian casting director, because I guess they couldn't really understand too much of what she was saying. They were like, okay, she's going to be really good with Brex. So he kind of just went on intuition, and I'm not sure what went on behind the scenes, but they went with me, and I couldn't be more grateful because now I know such awesome people. I know Brex and the whole cast, and Jeff Johns is an amazing person, and so are all the writers, and I'm just in the best place ever. I'm over the moon.
That's fantastic. Now, at what point did you learn who you were actually playing?
So when I had the Skype call with Jeff, I asked him, I'm like, so am I Wildcat? And he was like, yes. I'm like, okay, cool. Not Tammy. Got it. Yolanda Montez. So I had done my research already, because based off of the dummy sides that I got, I tried to get little clues, and I was pretty sure that I was Wildcat. And so I did all my background. And so I asked my questions based off of the research that I had done. And yeah, it was just questions to be a little more specific towards my character, and everything worked out. I'm really happy with everything.
You must have been an amazing student, because for your research to lead you to Wildcat, because Yolanda Montez in the comics is a pretty short-lived character. She's a pretty deep dive.
I know. I don't know. I had to, with me, like I have to get really specifics when I'm auditioning for characters, because if I'm just kind of doing it without any specificity, I kind of get a little lost. And I think you can read that. Like it's kind of like out of nowhere, like, blah. But yeah, I was just trying to get specific. And if it wasn't that, like I'm sure Jeff would have told me who it was, and I would have just done my research based off of that, because I had a retape anyways. But yeah, the Skype call was just a conversation. And after that, I had a tape and then send it in. And then once I sent it in, I got an email at 4 a.m. Four in the morning, Bulgarian time, I guess, because I was shooting, and they said, you got the offer, or you got the part. And I was like, I remember, because I had just gotten off of like a 14-hour shoot. So I'm like working in Spain, and then I got this part. So I know now that when I come back from shooting Rambo, I have this part with DC and everyone, and I go to Atlanta and everything. It was the best, honestly. That was like highlight of my year.
That's definitely the way you want to end a day. But I'm really, again, I'm just impressed at your research skills that you narrowed it down to Yolanda.
It was thanks to the dummy sides. The dummy sides gave a little information, and I'm like, I know it has to be one of these. And I thought it was her, or it was Huntress, or I had a few options, and then my manager was kind of guessing with me. He was telling me like, might be this person. I'm like, no, maybe it's this person. So I had a team of like effort behind this. So, I mean, it was great. It was so great.
And did you have any knowledge of comics in general, or any of these comics, before any of this landed in your world?
I did know I mean, I did obviously, I had some knowledge of comics because my brother grew up on DC Comics and everything, and he would collect comic books. I actually just found his old collection of comic books at my mom's house when I went to go visit. And he just has all these old DC comic books, but nothing specific. It was more like, oh, my brother likes DC. Cool. But once I got into the DC universe and I was auditioning for this and it became more serious, that's when I did more research. But no, I wasn't like a comic book collector or anything like that. I definitely had to do my research.
Especially on TV and in film, There are not a lot of Latina superheroes.
I know.
Honestly, only think of one other, and she's not even like a superhero, and that's Yo-Yo on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So does that give you a sense of like responsibility to live up to representing this whole range of girls?
Yes, I feel like there is some responsibility, and I am blessed to be in this position. I know that there were others that weren't Latina who went out for this role. So I am glad that they stay true to the comics and that we do have Latin representation in the show, because it very well could have gone the other direction and it could have been a different race playing my role. And I'm just really happy that they stay true to the comics and that, you know, there's a Latin superhero. I couldn't be happier. I'm going to represent, Sean. You just watch and see.
I'm sure you are. So obviously with any superhero show, there's going to be a lot of physicality. And
yes,
Stargirl has an amazing stunts team.
Oh my God. Don't even start with the stunts team. They deserve an award. They were amazing. Continue.
I'm curious if you did any sort of fight training or stunt training at all in preparation for this role.
Sorry. You just missed me. I totally did a backflip and like a cartwheel, but it's okay. Did I do any stunt training? I definitely did do stunt training. It was mostly for The Wires, where I would be like jumping down a building or like jumping really high up or onto that fence. There, on episode 4, you see me walking on a fence. I don't know if they took that out or not, but you see me walking on a fence and I needed to be on a wire for that. So it was mostly that. And the choreography, most of the time they taught us right before we did the scene. And that's because, obviously, because of time and money, but the stunts team killed it. Like, I am so grateful for the stunts team. You have no idea. Even like, I mean, I had conversations with Jeff about this and I told him how, I mean, I think we all told him how amazing the stunts team was. And I actually heard Jeff wasn't going any other route besides Walter. He needed Walter because Walter was the man. Walter was the one to get it done. And he was the one who, he's just super freaking good at what he does. And he does more than what he's asked to do. So I you can't see me right now, but I have my hands in the air, like all praise to that stunt team because they killed it. They made us look so professional and they made us look like we're real freaking martial artists. Like, it was amazing. I have no words. I just have all praise.
They are amazing stunts throughout the show. You know, Walter did a great job at creating an entire fighting style based around Stargirl's staff, which just
yes.
is really insane and awesome.
Sean, you have no idea. I mean, Walter worked so hard and he always cleared it. And if they didn't like it or if they wanted to see something different, he always had options. Like, that man, he is great. I actually still have a wrap gift that I'm supposed to give him. And I haven't seen him. He left after the last day, so I couldn't give it to him. And Kira, my stunt double, she was amazing. She made me look amazing. I just remember seeing the videos of the things that we were about to do, like our stunts that we were about to do. And I'm like, you're going to make us look like that? Like, I can actually do that? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, it felt like they were doing me. They were like, I don't know. They had our back for sure. And I am just so grateful because I've never seen a stunts team like that. Like, that was straight from the movies. And actually, Jeff even said that. Jeff was like, I know I keep referencing Jeff, but like, you know, he's the man of the show. He was like, if, you know, if the stunts aren't done right, we're not going to do them. And he just made sure that this show was going to be killer. So anybody who's hesitant to watch, they have to at least watch the scenes where like we fight and stuff, because they are out of this world. Oh.
They really are. I love how excited you are.
Okay, well, you're building me up. I'm like, now I'm going back in time in my brain. So I'm just like so hyped up. I'm so happy right now. I'm going back in time. Ah. Seriously, I have visions right now. I'm like, man, when I was stunt training and I was jumping on the trampoline, that was so fun.
But when we meet Yolanda, she's very much not like that. For the first three episodes, she's really withdrawn.
Yes.
And just sort of in her own little bubble and shutting out the world. And we don't find out why until the episode Wildcat, episode 4, where we see the backstory.
Yes. Oh. Yes. Yolanda is, she's very, I would say the choice of words for her, she's very guarded. You know, she is into sports. She's very athletic. She has good grades and she's very focused on her academics. But, you know, she had, I mean, it's just everyone goes through this when they're in school, when they're in high school or middle school or, you know, in grade school. They meet someone and they experience feeling they've never felt before. Is it love? I don't know. But it feels really fluffy and unicorns and butterflies inside, you know, and she ends up trusting this person when she's not really allowed to date. She has a very strict upbringing. Okay. And she trusts this person and he betrays her, and she's being shunned, and not only by her peers, but she's also being shunned by her school and her own family. She's in a place where it's really tough to trust anyone. She thought the one person she could trust and the one person who wouldn't betray her actually did. And that's a hard pill to swallow. You know, even when she does try to make amends with her family, you'll see it in episode 4, or you saw it in episode 4. She tries to make amends with her family and she realizes, hey, we're all human. We all make mistakes. And, you know, this is all part of life. We can't just live life perfectly. And she really, really tries to connect with her family and they just shun her and disown her just because of a mistake. And that's, I feel like that's one thing you can learn from the show, at least from Yolanda's perspective, is that one mistake doesn't define you as a person. It's something you go through and you learn from. It's either a lesson or you grow from it.
We're not defined by our worst day.
Definitely. I think that's a really big message from Yolanda's point of view.
This is one of my favorite things with Yolanda, is she sort of is given this whole new opportunity with Wildcat. And rather than embrace that and run away into a new identity, her initial reaction is, you know what? This is great. Thank you. But I need to reclaim myself first.
I think that's a very pivotal moment for her. I think she has so much fun being this new identity, being Wildcat. Wow, I can freaking slice toasters. I can jump on walls and I can walk on a freaking gate without falling on my butt. You know, like, she has all these new powers and this new found strength that it kind of takes her back to reality for a second. She kind of just stops because she's, you know, she's a smart girl. She kind of stops and thinks, okay, before I can just run away from my problems, because I've been doing that for the past year, you know, everyone at school, how she's been shunned by her family and her and the people at school. Like, she's just been bullied. She's like, I need to make things right. And that starts with my family. I'm going to tell them. this is all a part of who I am. It's all part of like who's making me me. You know, I feel like she needs to take a step back and fix things before she can just run into this new person and just run away from her problems. She's not going to do that. And then as soon as she gets that rejection again, after being so vulnerable and after being so real with her family, it's almost like I have no other option. Like she just feels so depleted inside. And then, of course, once again, who's at the end of the rope? Courtney Whitmore. Left my superhero outfit and cowl on the window. She just showed so much loyalty that I feel like Yolanda was like, this is my family. And that's another thing too. Like her family is no longer accepting her. So she kind of finds that family within Courtney and the JSA. Like that is her family. Do you get what I'm saying?
It's true that you can choose your family.
Yeah. I feel like that's true for some people for sure.
I've always felt that way.
I honestly think that's true. Like, I mean, sometimes you just find it in other people, you know, where they treat you with so much acceptance and love and you just feel comfortable. It's just like, those are the people that you want to surround yourself with. It's so important to surround yourself around the people who you want to be as a person, because at the end of the day, who you surround yourself with is who you become. I truly believe that. That is so important, because if you're surrounded by someone who's always like negative and bringing you down and telling you like, you can't do that. That's too high of a goal for you to reach. Why don't you do this instead? It's like, that's their own projection. So make sure that the people who are projecting their thoughts are people who are like lifting you up. That's how I feel.
And that leads me perfectly into the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is your real world relationship with the rest of the cast. It's something beautiful to behold, honestly.
Honestly, Sean, you have no idea the cast that I've been blessed with. Honestly, it sounds cliche, but I really feel like I've been blessed to be a part of this cast, because every single person has something amazing to offer and they all lift you up. They're all super supportive. We all get along so great. And there's no negativity. There's no drama. It's all love, honestly. And I feel like I've heard some horror stories about how people don't get along. And I just feel like, especially with it being a series and how there might be longevity to it, I feel like I can't be any more lucky to be a part of a cast that just like, they just always have your back and they're just always uplifting and cool and just fun to be around. This is crazy. I have no words at all.
You guys all genuinely seem like the fastest of friends. And
oh, yeah.
Not just the JSA, but of course, one of your very best friends is your arch nemesis on the show.
Oh, my baby! Meg DeLacy. What's up, girl? Yeah, she is my best friend. I love her so much. We actually, so when we shot the pilot, they put us up in a hotel. And then we were given the choice to locate ourselves. And, you know, relocate ourselves. And so we actually became almost like roommates. We had this duplex where I lived in the front and she lived in the back and we were neighbors, but we were also like roommates and we just became the closest friends. Oh my God. Did you know that we have the same birthday? We are both born on July 9th.
Can
you believe that? You did?
I did know that. Yes.
I feel like we went around, like me and Meg went around and we walked everywhere and told everyone this. I think we even told you this.
And you had a joint birthday party.
Woohoo! Yes, we did.
Now, did you guys meet on this show?
We did.
Because you guys were both on The Fosters, right?
Yes, I was just about to say that. So we actually did meet once before the show started. And it was on The Fosters. I was on an episode and I actually was like, oh, she doesn't really talk much. We didn't have the connection that we do now. And I know now the circumstances are different, but yeah, I met her once, but we didn't really talk. And now we are like the closest ever. We just FaceTimed yesterday and we were just talking about our quarantine and we kind of did a workout together.
Oh, that's so cute.
Oh, thank you.
So I want to talk a little bit more about what Yolanda goes through over the course of this season, because sure. She goes from this closed off person to finding this new identity and self as Wildcat. And then she sort of finds her anger. Well, I guess she had been, and it's your character, so correct me if I'm reading this wrong, but it seemed to me like she had been channeling her anger into like pushing it down and just sort of being sad. And then once she was Wildcat, she was allowed to let it out.
Yeah, I definitely see that. She was really sad with everything that happened. She was very, very sad. And I do think that she had a lot of pent up resentment because she trusted people who at the end of the day weren't there for her when she thought they always would be there for her. So, having these powers, I think with anyone, you know, they would feel like, well, I can do this now. I mean, what else can I do? You know? So I think that there was a struggle with, because she has so much faith in God and she's really religious. She doesn't want to turn mean, or she doesn't want to turn, like she doesn't want to turn to the dark side, but she does. She is very aware that she's capable and she has powers now and she can very much get revenge if she needed to, but that's not Yolanda. That's not what's in her heart. So there's definitely a struggle with navigating through those emotions, but she's very young and she's going through the motions. It's something she's never really experienced before. So she's just going through the motions. And, you know, as the show progresses, you'll see her decisions and how she feels about everything.
So the series wraps and then there's like months of radio silence where nobody really knows what character you're playing. You can't talk about it, obviously. Nobody has seen the suit. And then suddenly, you know, there's this quick shot at the end of the Crisis crossover. And then they reveal this poster, which has the first real good look at it.
It's so crazy because it wasn't even supposed to come out that way. It was supposed to be like we went to WonderCon and we introduced our characters. And from there, it was supposed to be a slow transition. But it obviously coronavirus happened and all that stuff kind of got pushed to the background. Couldn't really do it because it's just not safe and safety is first. So, we ended up just coming out with these new trailers of the fight scene and just my character. It was actually pretty surprising for me. I didn't think it was going to come out like that. There's no like heads up. So I was just really happy when the poster came out and my suit was there and I'm like, oh, yeah, they're telling everyone I'm Yolanda. So now I can post about it because I'm so proud of this character and I couldn't wait to post about it.
Yeah, it's been something that people have been very interested in.
Yeah, they were so surprised because they thought, okay, so I posted this picture of Batman and his daughter and he was all bloody and it was just a really cute photo. I just really loved it. So I posted it. So, and then I would read these comic books while I was in Atlanta, while I was shooting, I would read these comic books where it actually had Wildcat in it. But I posted a page of where it was like, Huntress was in it. So they thought I was Huntress. It was pretty funny.
Oh, that's great. I remember everyone thought that Jake was going to be Wally West.
Yes, everyone thought he was going to be Wally West, and he was so excited because he actually always wanted to play Wally West, so it got him really excited that the fans were kind of speculating because they brought up old Twitter feeds and stuff. It was really cute. He's like, look, everyone thinks I'm going to be Wally West. I tweeted this a long time ago, and I'm like, aw. But I have to say, his character is freaking amazing. And I think he does such a great job with it. Like, Jake is so talented and he knows this. If you're hearing this, Jake, you know this. You're a talented one, man.
I have this one question that I'm asking everyone on the cast that I speak to.
Sure.
And it's just a fun little question. If you couldn't play Yolanda, which other character on the show would you have wanted to play?
That's a great question. Geez, if I could play any other character. I mean, honestly, Sean, I feel like everyone who was cast because they are that person. They are exactly who they were cast. But, geez, it would be so fun to play. It would be fun to play Stargirl, but I honestly know for a fact that that goes directly to Breck, and she is so right for the role. Like, I couldn't imagine myself playing it, but it would be fun. If you're asking just like for shits and giggles, yeah, Stargirl would be fun, or like Brainwave would be fun. But realistically, everyone was cast the way they're supposed to be cast. I feel weird even answering that.
Well, yes, obviously the casting is perfect. I love it top to bottom. Yeah, it's just a matter of like, what role do you think would be fun? And of course, it's Stargirl.
So it would definitely be freaking fun if it was Stargirl, because she has the staff, she has all these like motives and everything. Like, she has so much to her. That would be fun. But realistically, Breck is totally right for the role, and she killed it. She killed it so hard. And I couldn't imagine anyone else as Stargirl. So, yeah. And also Brainwave. I would be Brainwave because he is amazing. And his levitation powers and reading people's thoughts, like, those are amazing. And they're so cool. But I'm so glad that I was cast as Wildcat, because the casting for Yolanda, like, I couldn't have related more to her at the moment. So it was just a really easy fit. It felt like it was meant to be.
And, you know, that's exactly what it should be. It's good that you feel at home in your character, because, you know, it's a character you gotta drive around for 13 episodes.
I know.
Plus whatever episodes are coming down the pike in future seasons.
I can't wait. I hope, because honestly, that was like, that first season was just, I wish I could have recorded like everything, like me being on set, just had like someone recording me, BTS. That was the most fun time I've ever had in a long time. So I was so happy there.
And you made some real lifelong friends, and Stargirl bringing people together.
She's just bringing everyone together. You know, that's what she does.
Well, Yvette, I want to thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
Of course, Sean. This was so fun.
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
I had so much fun. Stargirl
After Show. And that was Yvette.
I love her whole message about how your mistakes do not ruin or define you. I think that's so important for people to hear right now. And I know too many times people are just beaten down for something that they did in the past and not allowed to learn and grow. And so I think that was really great.
And I just love Yvette's entire energy. She's just so bubbly and fun, and just a real, real joy. And like, that's just the way she is always. She's so friendly and happy and outgoing, and honestly, just a joy to speak with.
Yeah, it was very strange listening to her after seeing her in the first three episodes, where she's so like down all the time and everything. Like, you don't get that spirit from her, but it's very clear she has it.
Yeah. And that just goes to show, you know, she's also a really good actress. At the end of the season, I have a more full interview with Yvette that I will be posting.
But we obviously don't want to give away spoilers and everything, so that's why you're getting the edited one now.
It is over an hour, so feel free to listen back for that. For now, we're going to head out and we're going to leave you with a couple of clips because next week we have two interviews, guys, and they are both like half an hour long. It's going to be a bit of a long episode, but we are talking to Cameron Gelman, who plays Hourman, and we are talking to Angelica Washington, who plays Beth, and who you should follow on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sarah, say goodbye to everybody.
We'll talk to you next week. And until then,
have a super great day.
This is Cameron Gelman, and you are listening to the Stargirl After Show. But it was still a series regular contract. And so, like, signed it, great. My team, no one knew what was going on. And then LJ from Super Suits reached out and was like, hey, let's get you going. And I was like, that was what blew the lid off, where I was like, holy, what do you mean? And she was like, what do you mean? You're our man. I was like, you're our man. What are you talking about? And she, you know, explained it to me. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, no one wanted to mention to me that I'm a superhero.
Hey, this is Angelica Washington, and you're listening to the Stargirl After Show. I never, ever saw a superhero on TV looking like me growing up. Never, ever. It wasn't until I was old enough to watch Halle Berry and Catwoman. And that was really, really pivotal for me, just because I had never seen a black woman be a superhero like that. So that was really, really cool. I feel really, really blessed. And it's really important to me for young black girls to see someone who looks like them on TV.
Stargirl After Show is a production of Fandom Limb Media.